Palestine, real one. And if I could ask you, first of all, then, Hedy, you know, about your life before the war, whereabouts you were living in Germany, and the sort of family life that you had.
I was born on August 15th, 1924, in Freiburg, Germany. And that's Freiburg is located in the Black Forest. But we lived in a village called Kippenheim, which is about 40 kilometers north of Freiburg. My father's family had lived there for a long time. I don't know exactly how long. I do know that my father was in business, and it was a business started by my great-grandfather in 1856. It was a dry good business, and my father was in business with his brother. Really very much against his own wishes. My father was a veteran of World War I, and he was a prisoner of the Russian, the Russian government, and was located on the, was in camp on the Black Sea, and was repatriated quite late. And when the boat that he was on traveled through the Mediterranean and through the Straits of Gibraltar around Spain, and then when they got to where Spain and France abut each other, there was a tremendous storm, and my father told me that for about a week, every morning when he woke up, he saw in the distance the same church steeple. And finally the storm abated and they went on, but they had to make an emergency stop in England to take on fuel and food. And my father knew when he would go back to Germany, he would have to go into his father's business, and it was not what he wanted. And so he jumped boat and stayed in England and notified his parents, and they were, of course, very upset and wanted him home, and he wouldn't come. And finally, they wrote to him and told him his father was very ill, and if he wants to see his father, he'd better come home soon. And he believed that and went back to Germany, and his father was not ill, and he had to go into the business, and did, and remained in that. But my father was a man of many, many interests, both intellectually as well as he was very good at doing things with his hands. He was always building things, repairing things. And he was very different from the rest of his siblings or the rest of the family. And at that time, the way men and women met was it was sort of an arranged kind of thing. That's not how my parents met. Both my parents, independent of each other, they didn't know each other, were at a fair in Frankfurt, which is maybe 200 kilometers north of Kippenheim. And my mother came from a city which is very close to Frankfurt, that came from Hanau. And they were both viewing the same exhibit and started to talk to each other. And then after that, at some point later on, they got married. And that was very much looked down upon and disliked, made his family very unhappy. And I think my mother always remained the outsider. She was never totally accepted because of the way they met, that she didn't come from this area. She was almost like a foreigner. And I think my mother was probably very unhappy because of that. Also, my mother's interests were different than a lot of the people in the community. She was more a worldly person, whereas people in the village, they really all they knew was the village. and not much else, if anything else. And so I always felt that my parents were different than the rest of the family, the rest of the community, which then made me different. And I wanted very much that we would be like everybody else. But for instance, if I was in somebody else's house or a friend or so, I didn't feel comfortable there because it was different from what I was used to. And I wanted to be back at home. And when I was back at home, I wanted to be someplace else again. And I never really resolved that, but always felt different. Another way that we were different, Jewish people, and we were Jewish, and Jewish people in the community, the men on Friday evening would go to the synagogue to services, and the family would go on Saturday morning. And then the custom was, after services on Saturday morning, families would visit with each other. My parents never went to services. Consequently, we never had any visitors. They also didn't visit. And that sort of made me unhappy, but nothing I could do about it. I didn't really know that I was Jewish until I was in first grade, because we didn't observe anything at home. And I had been on the Jewish high holidays. My parents did go to services, and so I'd been to synagogue, but I'd also been to church. There was only at that time one church which served both the Catholics and the Lutherans, which were the only two denominations in the village, only two other denominations. And I'd been to church, and I didn't understand what was going on in church, and I didn't understand what was going on in synagogue, and it didn't really make any difference to me. And when I was in first grade, probably during the first week in first grade, because religion was taught as part of the regular curriculum, the teacher said the next hour is going to be a religious instruction, and I don't know all of your denominations. So would all the Catholic children raise their hands? And up went my hand. And the teacher, who was a neighbor, said, "Hetty, put your hand down, you're not Catholic." Well, okay, no problem. And then all the Catholic children left and went to some other room. And then she said, "Now all the Lutheran children raise their hands," and up went my hand again. And she said, "But Hetty, you're not Lutheran." And, "Oh, I'm not? Well, what am I?" And I must have heard somewhere something that being Jewish wasn't good, though I can't recall what that may be. But when she told me that I was Jewish, I protested vehemently. I said, "I'm not Jewish, and I'm not going to go to this class, and I'm going to tell my mother about it, and my mother's going to straighten all this out, and I don't have to go." But she made me go, and the whole hour in that class, I protested. "I'm not Jewish, I don't have to listen or tell my mother," and so on. And then I came home that day and I said, "I don't like the teacher, I don't want to go back to school." And my mother said, "What happened?" And I told her, and she said, "But you are Jewish." And I said, "No, I'm not." "Why, are you?" And she said, "Yes, I am." And I said, "Is Daddy Jewish? Is Grandma Jewish? My uncle, my aunt?" And so on. "Yes, they're all Jewish." And I said, "Well, maybe all of you are, but I am not." But I had to attend religious classes in school because it was part of the regular curriculum. By the way, the school that I attended, which was a public grade school, was the same school that my father had attended. After I was in that school for 4 years, I left that school to go to attend what is called a gymnasium, which I guess at the lower end is probably like grade school. At the upper end, it's more like what one calls in the United States a junior college. And that was in a neighboring community. That was also a school that my father and my grandfather had attended many years before. But before I talk about go on with that, I want to go back just a little bit. I want to go back to 1933, which is the year that Hitler came to power on January 30th, 1933. And I remember very clearly hearing my parents and other adults talk about Hitler and that he was a bad person and that they hoped, at first that they hoped he wouldn't come to power, and when he finally did, that his regime wouldn't last and it couldn't last. And I didn't really pay much attention to it. This was adults talking, and I thought, well, you know, adults sometimes talk all this nonsense. It doesn't really have anything to do with me. But it didn't last very long before I realized it did indeed have something to do with me. Just 2 months later, on April 1st, 1933, there was a boycott of all Jewish businesses all over Germany. And since my father had a business, that boycott affected him. And I remember there was a SA man, those were the brown-shirted Nazis, stood in front of my father's business with his legs spread apart, his hands folded behind his back, and he seemed to be looking off into the distance. The purpose of that man standing there was to prevent Christians from coming to the store. And not only was there this man standing in front of my father's store, but also I saw one standing in front of the Jewish butcher, the Jewish baker. There was a big Jewish hardware store. There was somebody standing there. And I asked my father, what is this? Why are these men standing in front of the stores? And my father said, don't worry about it, it's nothing, it's going to go away. And I wanted to believe that, and indeed, it did go away. It lasted just that one day. But I'm sure the economic effects were not just that day when Christians probably hesitated or didn't come into Jewish stores, but it was long wait also, though, you know, what exactly it meant in terms of actual money, I don't know, because I was too young. The next thing then that happened was when my father took me to register with me for the gymnasium. The principal said to him, I'm very sorry, but Hedy cannot attend school here because you're Jewish. And my father didn't say anything, but pointed with his finger to something that he wore in his lapel. And it was something that, I'm not exactly sure what it was, but it had something to do with the fact that he was a veteran of World War I. And the principal looked and said, oh, I didn't know that you were a veteran of World War I. In that case, Hedy can attend the school. And that's how I was allowed to go there. And that was in 1935. When I first stepped to that school, there were a lot of Jewish children in that school, quite a lot of them from Kippenheim even. Over the years, the numbers decreased, some perhaps due to the fact that parents couldn't afford to pay the tuition. The other reason was that families were fortunate to leave Germany, and so the children, of course, went with them. The next thing that happened caused me to realize that Hitler and his regime does have some effect on me was in 1936, my grandfather, my mother's father, who lived in Hanau and was in business there, a shoe business that he started in 1896. He came to live with us for a lengthy period of time. And I thought at first that was wonderful to have my grandfather there every single day, because before he would come maybe on a weekend. My grandmother had died in 1930. And the reason this my grandfather lived with us was because one day he was walking on the sidewalk in Hanau when a Nazi came up to him and said, "Jews are not allowed to walk on the sidewalk. Get off." And so he walked in the street. And the same Nazi said, "And Jews aren't allowed to walk in the street either. You are under arrest." And he was taken to jail. And after he was there several days, he was told, "If you promise to sell your home, sell your business, leave town, and never come back, we will release you." And so he agreed to that. And so he no longer had a livelihood. He no longer had a place to stay. And so he came to live with us and stayed with us several months. And when he felt he was perhaps too much of a burden for us, he moved on to my mother's brother and his wife and stayed with them for a while. And then when he felt he was too much for them, he would go to an old age home and stay there for several months and then come back to us again. And at first I didn't know why that was, but later on I learned what the reason was. Things in school began to deteriorate. As fewer Jewish children were left, it also seemed almost simultaneously that the discrimination against me by the Christian children increased. And of course I was more dependent on socialization with them as there were fewer Jewish children there. For instance, break, which usually is the best time of the day, was the worst time of the day for me because nobody would talk to me. Because the last couple of years, there were only one other child and I in school, and the other child was a boy a year younger than I. And during recess, the boys were in the back of the school and the girls in the front. So he was alone in the back of the school and I was alone in the front of the school. And I used to lean up against one of the pillars of the building. And in fact, when I went back there last year and went to the school, I looked to see if there wasn't an indentation in that pillar from where I used to lean up against it, but there wasn't. And for the last 2.5 years in that school, I was there a total of 3.5 years, but for the last 2.5 years that I was there, I had a math teacher who used to come to school most of the time in his SS uniform, which is a black uniform, and he wore knee-high boots. In his right boot, he always carried a revolver. I don't know if it was loaded or not. And when he asked me a question, he would either hold his hand on the revolver or a couple times actually pointed at that boot. And so learning was probably zero for me because I was petrified. And when he asked me a question, regardless whether my answer was right or wrong, he would always ridicule me in front of the class and say, "Well, this is a Jewish answer, and we know that Jewish answers are no good." And then the children would laugh. And I would come home and I would share this with my parents and say, "I don't want to go to school anymore. I want to go back to the grade school that I used to be in because I had no problems there." And my father, who was perhaps more of a dreamer than my mother was more of a realist, my father would say to me, "Well, think about what you're going to be doing later on when you graduate from this school," which was many years away yet. "You will be going to either Switzerland, to the French-speaking part of Switzerland, or to France to perfect your French. And this is something that most of those children, if any of them, probably will never do. So think about that, that wonderful opportunity that you will have." And I wanted to think about that and believe that. But the next day I was back in school and I had to deal with the children not talking to me or say, calling me a dirty Jew or some other derogatory term. The math teacher ridiculing me. And I got angry at my father for saying something to me that was so far off that was not a reality for me. I heard my mother a couple of times in discussion with my father say, you know, maybe we should take her out of school. And also, I heard her talk still later saying, you know, financially, we really can't afford it anymore. We should take her out. My father said, you know, we can starve, but we're not going to take her out of the school. And so I remained in the school, and it was a very unhappy experience. And all the other teachers were fine. This one teacher just spoiled my whole school life there. I want to talk now about November 9th and November 10th, which has been known as Crystal Night or the Night of the Broken Glass, and how that affected me and my family. And I think what I'm going to say probably can be more or less duplicated as having happened all over Germany and Austria at that time. Austria had already been annexed to Germany. I remember the night on a Wednesday night, which was, I think, November 9th, if I'm not mistaken, 1938. Before I went to bed, my father said to me, if you hear some strange noises during the night, immediately get out of bed and go out into sit and get into the wardrobe in the hallway. And I said, what are you talking about? Why? What kind of noise? And he said, don't ask any questions, just do as you're told, which was totally unlike my father or unlike my parents. I was always encouraged to ask questions and received answers. If I didn't receive direct answers, I was encouraged to find the answers. But here I'm told, don't ask questions, just do as you're told. And so I went to bed and probably laid in bed for quite a while before I was able to sleep, listening for something I didn't know what to listen for. And finally fell asleep and got up the next morning and forgot all about it and got ready to go to school and left for school at 10 minutes after 7, just like I did every other day, with my bicycle, together with this one other Jewish child who was at the school, who was also from Kippenheim. And as we approached the school, we had to pass a house where a Jewish dentist had his home and his practice. And I noticed that every window in that building was broken. I had seen a broken window here or there, but here was a whole row of broken windows. And though I didn't know why, I assumed it was because he was Jewish. And as we entered the schoolyard and parked our bicycles, I just sensed something is different. But I didn't know what it was, and I was afraid to ask. And so I proceeded on to my classroom, and this young boy proceeded to his classroom. And classes started as they did every day. And about a half hour later, the principal walked in, and he gave a long talk, which even later that day, I couldn't remember what he actually said. But at some point, and then while he was talking, he pointed his finger at me and he said, get up, you dirty Jew. And I heard what he said, but I could not believe it. I mean, how could this nice man, this gentle man, this good man, whose daughter is one of my classmates, how could he have said that? I must have dreamt this. And so I asked him, please repeat what you said. I'm sorry I didn't hear it. And he not only repeated it, but came over and took me by the elbow and pushed me out the door. And I stood out in the hallway, and all kinds of thoughts were racing through my head. What did I do? Did I not listen? Did I yawn? Did I fall asleep? What did I do? What am I going to tell my parents? And the kinds of searching questions that I was asking myself later on, I had learned, is typical of victims look to themselves for what have I done, rather than realizing that it's an outside force that has caused them the problem. And as these thoughts were racing through my head, and I had no answer for them, the door opened, and the children came running out. They were putting on their coats. Some pushed me, and others called me a dirty Jew, and so on. And they all left. And I had no idea where they were going, because there was no field trip planned that day. And I didn't know, now what do I do? Do I go with them? Do I stay in the hall? Do I go back in the classroom? And I finally decided to go back into the classroom, and I sat at my desk, got out a book, and tried to study. I don't think I had any idea what was in that book. And very shortly afterwards, I heard soft knocking on the door, and the other Jewish boy came in. He had had very much the same experience as I did. And because I was a year older than he came to me for advice. And I said to him, well, you go back to your classroom and you study. I'm studying. And he said, I can't. I'm scared. I want to stay here. And I said, all right, you can stay here, but you have to be quiet because I am studying. I was being very authoritarian. And he said, well, can I go over there to the window and look out? And I said, yes, go ahead and look out, but you've got to leave me alone now. I need to study. And he was at that window maybe an hour, hour and a half, when he suddenly became very excited. And he said, look, come here. What is this? And I joined him at the window, and we saw men in a row, three in a row, chained to each other, chained to the ones in front of them, in front of them, chained to the ones behind them, with SS men with whips, hitting them and urging them to walk faster. And though we didn't recognize any of these men, we just assumed that they're Jewish. And with that, we decided, you know, nothing so far today has made a whole lot of sense. We better call home. And I called my mother, and somebody answered the phone and said the phone is no longer working. And I called my father at his business, my aunt, my grandmother, and all those phones, I got the same answer. The phone is not no longer working. And Hans, the young boy, called his mother and I don't know, some other people, and he got the same answer. So with that, we decided we just better go home. Though we were afraid to leave the school, we don't leave at 10:30 in the morning without asking somebody, because there also was nobody there to ask, or we thought there was nobody there to ask. As I approached my house, I noticed that it looked differently than the way it looked when I left in the morning. We had green shutters on the house, and they were never closed during the daytime. Sometimes at night, in the winter, if it was very cold and very windy, they would be closed, and they were closed. And I ran to the door, and it was locked, and I didn't even know that you could lock the door. And I ran around the back of the house, and that door was locked. I came back around the front, rang the doorbell. I could hear it, but nobody answered. And I wondered, you know, where's my mother? She should be home. And I stood, you know, on the sidewalk in front of the building for a couple of minutes, just trying to understand what seemed. I just wasn't able to comprehend what was going on. When I saw a man walking down the street, who any other time, if I found myself on the same side of the street as he, I would have crossed the street because I knew him to be one of the town's worst, or the village's worst, Nazis. But in my desperation that morning, I said to him, do you know where my mother is? And he said, I don't know where the bitch is, but if I find her and she's still alive, I'm going to kill her. Well, with that, I just took off and decided I've got to find my father, my aunt, my grandmother, somebody. And on my way, I had to pass this Jewish hardware store. And all the windows were broken, and there was a crowd of people with reaching in and taking out stuff, laughing and joking, and it was sort of a carnival kind of atmosphere, which I also didn't understand. And as I approached my aunt's house, I could see my mother and my aunt looking out of the second story window. And I wondered, why are they looking out? What are they trying to see? And my mother opened the door, and she looked kind of grotesque. And she was taller and taller and thinner than my aunt. And she was wearing my aunt's clothes. And we exchanged what had occurred to both of us. And my mother told me that about 10 minutes after I left for school that morning, some Nazis came to the house and arrested my father and took him away. He was still in his pajamas and slippers. They did not give him an opportunity to get dressed or even put a coat on, and it was very cold. And as he was walking out the door, he said to my mother, "Find Hetty and try and stay together." A couple of the Nazis stayed behind. They broke all the windows. And that's why my mother closed all the shutters. They also did some other vandalism in the house. And then after my mother closed the shutters, she secured the house and ran down the street to my aunt, not realizing that she was still wearing her night clothes. And my aunt...